Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 35. My name is Karen. This is my voice. This is Kristen's voice.
Sup? Words. The minute someone tells you to just talk, it's impossible to think of what to talk about. So that was my contribution.
Do you think that this opening was as funny as the first time we did it?
Probably not. Technical difficulties. At least we discovered them very quickly and we were able to...
You say quickly, I say I wanted to start 51 minutes ago.
I know, but that happens.
We did figure it out. All is well. Hopefully this recording will be top notch for you. Sorry, I got distracted by the cat. She
just really, really wanted to settle in and take a nap. Yes, yes, do it.
Oh, no, now she's cleaning herself.
Again.
Okay. You can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. Today we're going to be talking about our final fan casting.
For Lightning Thief,
yes.
We're trying to hit all the characters we haven't talked about so far.
Yeah.
Except for some of the minor gods that may make an appearance, but mm-hmm. there's no way we're going to be able to get
We basically picked our top 10 characters that we hadn't talked about that weren't the gods and obviously isn't the trio because we already know who they are. But, you know, since filming literally is starting today as we're recording this, June 2nd, we wanted to get out our last thoughts before they were actually announced.
We had thoughts of, you know, maybe doing a whole episode for each one of these at one point, but we knew time is of the essence, and there's no way we're going to be able to get more than maybe one more done before we start hearing about the cast, so we'll just give them all to you at once. Boom, here we go.
But I'm kind of excited. I think it'll be fun to just, like, rapid-fire these guys.
So. I agree.
Okay, let's get into our news and updates first. As I said, filming begins today for the Percy Jackson TV show.
Another woo!
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be a woo girl all day because it's exciting. They've started, guys. It's going to be real. It's going to be real.
Oh, man.
That was a How I Met Your Mother reference.
Oh, was it?
Woo girls are a thing.
Oh, really? I just thought you were hilarious and
funny. Definitely stole that from somebody else.
You didn't even have to tell me that. You're a good person.
Yeah. Plagiarism is not good.
Okay, so let's see. Yes, filming begins today. It's very exciting. I think everybody's, you know, just ready for this to get kickstarted. We're going to be keeping an eye on all the socials and see what kind of stuff we get. Hopefully a lot of fun behind the scenes stuff. Becky tweeted out... When was this? This was actually May 27th. She quote tweeted Rick's camera tests by James Bobbin picture and said, "Looked at some of the tests today. They look terrific. Those of us worried about a certain young one's makeup and hair, she looks phenomenal." Obviously talking about Annabeth. "The lighting situation is a little tricky on set, but one can't tell that because everyone on our team are talented pros. # glowing."
I love it.
Me too.
I love it.
We still don't know if... Well, somebody saw Leah the other day, and she had long braids in, and most of them were, like, her natural hair color, and some of them were blonde. No telling if that's how she's going to be on screen.
Right.
If they'll switch between, like, maybe an afro, braids, you know, however, different styles of things. I would actually love if, like, her hair constantly changed, because that's a very normal thing for a girl to have, like, different hairstyles all the time.
Yeah.
So... We'll just have to see about that.
Somebody at camp is going to be really good with hair.
Yes.
Like, a camper we don't know is going to be Annabeth's bestie and help her do her hair all the time.
That would be cool.
Right? That would be fun.
We also got a little bit of a leak, I guess you could call it, from Night Edge Media. And they have an exclusive here that says, Percy Jackson Disney Plus series taps Simon Chin in minor role. And they don't name the role, but they do say that he will be appearing in either episode 1 or 2. Now, this could be very exciting because he could, like, a lot of people are like, oh my God, he's Gabe. Not enough episodes to be Gabe. Some people even suggested Ares. Again, not enough episodes to be Aries. Yeah. I had the thought that maybe like Argus would be kind of cool mm-hmm. for him, but it's probably an even smaller role than that. And he's been in a lot of generic unnamed roles for other productions. Like he was a truck driver and corrections officer number two. So he could just be a sort of background character for one of the scenes.
Yeah. Like I'm thinking maybe since when we start Lightning Thief, Percy's in New York, like he could be a shop owner or he could be a guy he meets on the street or whatever. Like
he could be a museum security guard.
Right. Like, yeah. He may have some lines even, but he wouldn't necessarily be, like, a named significant mm-hmm. character.
Right.
I will say his look doesn't really scream any particular character. I know, to me anyway.
Yeah.
I know some people thought maybe Gabe, maybe whatever, and we kind of debunked mm-hmm. those. But, yeah, he doesn't really have a specific look that makes me think one of a specific character.
So. He looks kind of tough, so I feel like he would be not like a villain, but like some sort of antagonist or like a security guard yelling at Percy to stop like fooling around the museum or something.
Right.
I think that would be kind of cool. I'm kind of bummed he doesn't have a bigger role because I just like I think he has a nice face.
No, I agree.
You know?
I agree. Maybe he'll pop back up again.
Yeah. So that's actually all we have in terms of the Percy Jackson news right now. Again, we're trying to record this a little bit early so we can get our thoughts out into the universe. So between now and Monday, there's like 4 days, and I'm hoping like no other announcements come out, actually.
There's 4 days, but two of them are weekend. Right. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Work with us one more time.
Yeah. So hopefully you guys can hear this, and it's not like, they already cast all those characters. Why are you coming up with, you know, all of your fan casts?
When we recorded it, there wasn't anybody yet.
Yeah, but
there won't be. I can feel
it. Yeah, me too. So, okay, aside from all of that, we will be get casting soon. Becky's tweeted ad nauseum about, you know, we have to wait for contracts and photos to be taken and the right wording for the announcements and social medias to be set up and confirmed.
And then you've got all the timing of things. Like mm-hmm. Disney's got other projects and they don't want to step on other projects, so they have to make sure that if they're, you know, going to be announcing something for another Disney Channel show, that it, you know, it has enough time to have its own announcement. You know, it's a whole symphony of things going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely. But we did get some other things that are related to Percy Jackson, but, like, not really. So, John Steinberg and Dan Schatz are the showrunners for Percy Jackson. They did Black Sails. And they are also EPs for a new show. I thought this was a movie. It's a television show coming out on 6/16, June 16th, on Hulu, called The Old Man, starring Jeff Bridges. And staff writer Daphne Olive is also writing for Percy Jackson and the Olympians. So it's a whole little nice family.
Yeah.
There is a trailer out now. We will link to it in the show notes. And I think it looks pretty good. And there are two dogs in the show. And they're cute Rottweilers who are very, very good boys/girls. I don't know their sex.
Gender.
But yes. So... It's exciting. I care more about the dogs, but Jeff Bridges is kind of cool, too.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of this one. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, really? I feel like this is like... I thought it was a movie, and it felt very much to me like Oscar fodder, so I felt like you would be all over this, but it's a TV show coming out on Hulu, so I guess not. But yeah, give it a look. I think
it's an FX show. It's premiering on FX and streaming on Hulu. I'm making a guess. It's probably drug related. Almost all FX shows have drugs in them, and I can handle a good show. Trust me, I don't mind. But I have a thing against shows making drug dealers out of normal people. There is money.
He's
the
like
trailer started as I was doing this, and there's a big chunk of money.
Yeah, I think he's a former like some sort of, you know, spy guy agent person, and like he's coming out of retirement or something to
Trust me, do something. I was thoroughly enjoying Big Sky and its craziness, and now all of a sudden it's all about a drug cartel from Canada, and I'm like, okay, listen. I was on the northern border. I thought I was going to be okay without it being completely drug-centric because I, you know, started watching Weeds, which I know is about drugs, but it got so much worse. And I can't watch Breaking Bad because it just drives me crazy. I'm like, yes, drugs are bad and they're a problem, but there are other problems in the world. Not everyone has to be a drug dealer. I'm going to jump off my soapbox now. Have a nice day.
Percy Jackson podcast, everyone.
You never know what you're going to get with us. Yeah,
exactly. Well, okay, this next piece of news is a bit closer to Percy Jackson anyway. So Aryan Simhadri, who will obviously be playing Grover, will be in Trevor the Musical, which will be on Disney Plus on June 24th. There is a trailer for this as well. It looks adorable, and it's Aryan's first ever like theater/Broadway production, and I think it looks really cute. I think younger fans of Percy Jackson especially will probably really like this. It's pretty sure it's like a queer show, like a queer musical, so you know, yay for Pride Month. And yeah, I'm just, Aryan seems really excited about it, and I think it looks very cute.
It looks like they filmed it on stage, yeah. So it's honestly got, like, Hamilton-esque vibes,
yeah.
If you watched the stage production of Hamilton on Disney. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, a TV show musical. It's not, like, High School Musical.
Right, exactly.
They filmed it on stage because someone in the comments said, I actually watched this live, and it was fantastic, and I was like, oh! I like stage, like, it's, I love watching stage stuff, yeah. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be really neat.
Yeah.
All right, wrapping up our news section, Reed Riordan also posted highlights from Rick and Daniel Jose Older's Instagram Live talking about writing myths and magic in times of crisis, and they've got, like, a really good back and forth between them, some really, like, deep topics about writing and representation and advice for writers and all that kind of stuff. So I will link to that. It's a very good read, and I hope you guys enjoy that if you missed their Instagram Live. And lastly, The Last Fallen Star, which is the first book in the Gifted Clan series by Gracie Kim, hit the New York Times best-selling paperback list.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to get caught up before the next book.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like, oh, I haven't read that one yet. I need to grab it.
Yeah.
And you do.
But she was obviously very excited.
Heck
and
yeah.
Like, that's super exciting for us as well.
And that's really good news, too, that like enough people are excited and picking it up and have learned about it since then that they realize. Like, oh, the next book's coming. I should grab that and read it now because I can, you know, jump right in on the second one. That's always really
good. It's so hard sometimes to remember that, like, you publish a book and it feels like, you know, the first week or two, like, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's buying it. That's when your sales really spike because it just came out. Then it kind of feels like sometimes people forget about it and they're, like, on to the next thing. But that's the awesome thing about books is they live forever because people are always discovering it. And that's why I really love that we are going through the Rick Riordan Presents books, even trying to catch up on older ones. Like, we did the first Aru Shah book, which came out, like, 5 years ago.
Yep.
But for some people, that's, for you, it was brand new for you.
Mm-hmm.
And still just as exciting. And, you know, who cares if we're behind? Like, you know, you discover things when you discover things. You can't control that. So
exactly.
I'm very happy to maybe be 0.00001% of the reason why she hit the New York Times bestseller list.
Hey, that's always good fun.
Yeah, it is. Okay, let's get into our main discussion. We're talking about our final fan casting choices, and we're basically just trying to fit in as many fan casts as we can before they do the official announcement.
And we basically each picked one.
Yeah.
To try, we can talk about these. I know we can.
Yeah.
So, like, we can keep talking for decades.
We had decided beforehand, okay, we're each going to pick one. That way we have two people to talk about for each character. And that way we can get through, like, we decided on 10 characters. So it was going to be, like, a good chunk of people. And I was like, if we absolutely have to, we can come up with an alternative, but, like, try not to. And I swear, like, half of mine, I'm like, but also this person would work.
Right? I know.
It was so hard not to.
I still have all of my notes from when I was pulling character actors, and I'm like, oh, I can always throw that one into the mix, too. Like,
yeah.
If we need to. Yeah. No. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress.
We do. So we're going to start off with Sally because I feel like this is the most obvious one. Kristen and I...
It's the one we agree on.
Yeah. Like, it's got to be Melissa Ponzio. Like, I just want her so bad. She is such a great mom on Teen Wolf. She's 49, so, like, technically a little older probably for...
Yeah, but I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a huge problem. It's, she plays younger. I mean, she just got done on Walking Dead, and I don't think she was playing anybody.
She has great skin. Like, she looks timeless, honestly.
She's flawless. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
She was in an early role, I think, on The Vampire Diaries, wasn't she? Like, in one of the first seasons, I'm pretty sure she played, like, a jogger who died or something.
It could be. I got attacked. Remember.
And she does not look any different than she did, like, what? That was, like, 10 years ago at least? Probably more than that at this point.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
she doesn't look like she changed at all.
So, yeah, we both love Melissa Ponzio and want
Melissa Ponzio or death. But I guess if we have to choose death, then... I said Marissa Tomei, who's Aunt May from the new Spider-Man movie. She's 57, so she's even older. But again, flawless. Like, she is so gorgeous. And I just, like, she has this very warm, energetic feel about her, which is why I feel like she would make a great mom for Percy.
Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to go for, was someone who has, like, enough energy to kind of match Percy, because he is, you know, off the walls half the time, but also kind of gives that, like, calming energy.
Yeah,
because I feel like that is something Sally does for Percy, is she just feels so centered and calm and whatever,
grounded,
that as soon as he is in her presence, like, his whole body just kind of relaxes.
Yeah,
because it's like, okay, mom's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, my choice was Jennifer Garner. And this was not related to... I thought of her before I realized that Adam Project, like, obviously her and Walker work together. I was like, oh, yeah, she'd be perfect. Like, I could see her as Sally. And then I was like, oh, yeah, and they've worked together.
Yeah.
He's already used to calling her mom. Mm-hmm. Done. Easy peasy. Like, plus, Jennifer's been picking a lot of fun, younger, like, directed projects, mm-hmm. like kids projects, and, you know,
yeah,
she just did that one movie about, I think it was Yes Day, where she's got like three kids and they have to say yes all day, and it's an insane, you know, confluence of events,
yeah,
stuff like that. Like, she's been doing some more of that kind of thing, so I think she could be game for a Percy Jackson.
Yeah, she's also just a very warm person who I think, like, feels very wise, and that's another thing about Sally, is like, Sally kind of knows best. Like, she kind of always has the answer, even if it's not necessarily the answer Percy wants. But I feel like she's just such a good mom, and Jennifer Garner definitely gives you that vibe.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I actually had a lot of trouble coming up with Gabe. Like, a lot. And I could not get Cypher from The Matrix, was in the movies as Gabe, and I couldn't get him out of my head. And it was like, you can't choose him. I tried really hard not to choose people from the movies, because they had already been cast, even though a couple of the people I really liked.
Same.
So I ended up going with Michael Rooker, who's 67, so he's quite a bit up there.
But Gabe is...
he's really good at being kind of gross, and that's what I kept trying to think of, is like, who can play gross characters? And I was like, Michael Rooker, kind of, you know, I love him as Yondu, but Yondu's kind of gross sometimes, so I feel like it would work.
Yeah. I similarly had some problems with Gabe. But then it was like the floodgates opened, and suddenly I could find nobody but guys who could play Gabe.
Yeah.
So I actually have four names. That
four?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I told you, it was like the floodgates opened. I couldn't find anybody, and then all of a sudden it was like, or this guy, or this guy. Ooh, but this guy. Ooh, how about this guy? I ended up settling on Nick Frost. If you've ever watched a Simon Pegg movie, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, any of those, he's basically Simon Pegg's, like, bestie.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of projects
also
together.
Into the Badlands.
Yes.
He was in that.
He was also in Into the Badlands. He just kind of gave off Gabe vibes for me. Like, he's just kind of loud and ruckus, mm-hmm. and, you know, gives off that, like, he can give off that, like, the energy that I feel like Gabe gives off. I will just read off a couple of the other names that came to me. Rainn Wilson, famous for being Dwight on The Office.
Oh, okay.
He can be quite gross when he wants to be. Yeah. And if they dirtied him up a little bit and he, you know, puts a little weight on, he loses and gains weight all the time. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he could do that without any major issue.
Right.
David Cross is a comedian who can be really kind of obnoxious, so he wouldn't be too bad. Or Danny McBride, who plays nothing but gross people in his time.
I feel like I know that name.
Tropic Thunder, he's the munitions expert.
Oh gosh, it's been a long time since I watched that movie, against my will.
If you've seen The Righteous Gemstones or seen any previews for it, he's one of the brothers. He's the middle one. He had a show of his own that is, the name of it is escaping me at the moment. But he's been in Hollywood for quite a bit. He's almost always got like a black curly mullet. He's a big guy. Okay. You know.
Yeah.
He plays nothing but these like gross, sometimes funny, but sometimes just gross characters.
Yeah. I should say that the first person I thought of before Michael Rooker was actually T.J. Miller, except I do not like T.J. Miller, and he's been in a bit of hot water lately, so I didn't want to choose him, but, like, that's the kind of gross character that I was looking for.
Well, and I was also thinking with, you know, I wanted to put Gabe's energy against Sally's, and in addition to wanting it to be, like, gross, I wanted him to be older, because I wanted it to feel like a complete mismatch.
Yeah.
And if you've got, like, a Jennifer Garner or a Ponzio or even Marissa Tomei, I want whoever the guy is to feel, like, wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was kind of trying to go for somebody a little older. I definitely think if you had somebody like Rooker, you could go with, you know, a slightly younger Sally just to kind of make the mismatch that much more evident. But, yeah. So I had a couple of options. But I do think Nick Frost would be a really
I really like him. He's a super, super sweet guy. I got to interview him once, and he's, like, so lovely and nice. But he very much can play those, like, gross characters, so it would work. And
they're not even, like, sometimes they're just, like, you know, physically kind of gross, but they're actually not bad people.
Yeah.
And sometimes he plays, like, terrible people.
Yeah.
Like, he can kind of do all realms of
it. Yeah.
And so I feel like he could do Gabe justice.
Yeah. And I was very impressed with him in Into the Badlands, Justice for Into the Badlands. Hashtag, please give us season 4. Hashtag, I know it will never happen. Don't let my dreams die.
Hey, okay. Weirder things.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from that, Nancy Boba Fett. Okay. So when we had initially talked about doing these characters, you were like, yeah, let's cast Luke and Clarice and those kind of people. And I was like, I'm having trouble because, like, I don't know a lot of young actors these days. Like, I'm not as familiar with, you know, the 12 to like 16 year olds because I just don't watch a lot of shows with kids or, you know, stuff
it's
like
not
that.
Easy. Even I had a lot of trouble and I had to really, like, dig into some lists and see names.
I just ended up Googling, like, you know, who are the young kids coming up in Hollywood these days? And I tried to go for, like, you know, 12 to 15 age range because no matter who they play, even if they're a little bit older, like, they'll still look very young. And I landed on Ariana Greenblatt for Nancy, a la Love and Monsters, because she's super talented actress, like really, really good. I've seen her in a couple of things, and she's very cute, very kind of pretty and wholesome looking. But in Love and Monsters, her hair is teased out. She's like constantly dirty, and she has this like rough and ready to rumble attitude. And she's 14 years old, so she'd be, you know, Nancy, I assume, is 12 because she's in the same grade as Percy.
Yeah.
But I just feel like in terms of attitude, like, she would be really good. And I kind of wanted Nancy, this is going to be such a weird analogy, I kind of wanted Nancy to be a big name like they do in the beginning of the Scream movies. You know how they get, like, somebody really famous that they kill off at the beginning? I wanted Nancy to be this, like, huge name, and she's, like, it's the one and only time you ever see her.
Right. Like, sometimes people call that stunt casting, but it's just fun.
Yeah.
Like, but you feel somebody huge, and then they just never show up again.
And if you do it with Nancy, it would allow some kid to just be, like, this really over-the-top, big kind of bully character, and with really no, like, heavy consequences as to, like, casting them or needing to keep them around. It would just be funny, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good fun. Okay, this is the character I can picture the least. I do not know what Nancy Boba Fett looks like. I have no idea what she sounds like. I don't know her character. I decided not to really do that much research and just go with my gut. And my gut told me that Abby Ryder Fortson would be a really good Nancy Boba Fett. For those who are going, who is this? She's the little girl from Ant-Man.
Yes, yeah,
she's Paul Rudd's daughter. Mm-hmm. I know her from a little show called The Whispers.
I just saw that on here, and I was like,
she was the creepiest child ever on that show, and I freaking fell in love with her. She has so much talent in her, and now she's aged up a bit. I mean, it's probably been, what, 6 years since Ant-Man? Seven years since Ant-Man? So she's a little older. She's 14 now, because in Ant-Man, she had to have been 8, maybe 9. So she's a little older now, but she's still 14. Totally fits in with the Percy Jackson ages. And I think you could, like, you know, do her hair up and make her a really convincing Nancy Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. She's a very talented girl.
With, so like, makeup and, like, you know, some pimples and not prosthetics, but, like, I guess just makeup. Like, you could make her kind of transform in that. And I feel like she's a very precocious kid. Like, she's a very talented actress just from me seeing Ant-Man. And I feel like she could basically do, you know, whatever she wanted.
And I think she has a memorable face. Mm-hmm. So, like, even people who don't necessarily know her name would be like, oh my god, I know that girl. So it would be a bit of that same thing, like stunt casting.
Yeah.
Here's this pretty decently famous human being who's now never going to be in any more series. Right,
exactly.
Like, haha, just kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think she'd be great.
That's cool. So Mrs. Dodds is next. And for Mrs. Dodds, I was trying to come up with an older woman, like quite a bit older, because even the Mrs. Dodds from the movies, like she had gray hair. I was trying to come up with somebody who could look very sinister, and I had trouble doing that. Like, I Googled actresses over 60, and like so many, like Helen Mirren, you know, she's stunning. Like, she is still so beautiful. And not that she couldn't do this, because she would kill this role. But I was like, I want somebody who's a little bit more sinister, a little bit less classically beautiful. And not saying this person is not beautiful, because she is. But for some reason, Kathy Bates jumped out at me a la Misery, which she's quite a bit younger in, because that was quite a few years ago. I saw the movie for the first time this year, I think. And that, like, straight-faced psychopath behind the eyes look that she gives is kind of what I imagine Mrs. Dodds looks like. She's 73 now, so she's a bit older. And I feel like just in terms of, like, her face and stuff, I could see her playing the role, although that is somebody who's, you know, quite a big get for this.
I mean, it could like, we haven't had any other big
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, half of these are like, actually, this person would be really good in this role, and I want them to cast it, and half of them is like, if we had the dream budget, and nobody else had anything to do.
Right, there's no conflict. Yeah. They can do all these projects.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm with you there. Okay, so my pick for this couldn't be more different.
Yeah. Like, that's okay, because I'm obsessed with this now. Because,
like, Kathy Bates is one thing, but if you looked at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you get Tilda Swinton.
I love Tilda Swinton.
There's just this thing about Mrs. Dodds where she's supposed to be bird like.
Yeah.
Like, she's a fury, and I've always kind of pictured them, like, bony and, like,
bat-like, otherworldly. Almost.
Yeah. So, like, I was looking for really thin actresses that could definitely handle that, like, creepiness and the weirdness. And nobody does weird better than Tilda Swinton.
Nobody.
She's the queen, and I freaking love it. So, yeah, Tilda Swinton is my pick. But as you were describing Kathy Bates, and you were looking for, like, an older woman who, you know, it made me think of Downton Abbey. Because there's a woman named, I believe the actress's name is Phyllis Logan. I just tossed a link in our doc.
I'm looking.
She plays Mrs. Hughes. She's one of the housekeepers downstairs. I have never seen her in anything other than Downton, but her look is very much like sweet old lady that I think you could turn into Mrs. Dodds.
You know, there's something in her, like, mouth slash smile that, like, as soon as I saw her, I was like, yes, that's actually kind of what I was going for.
Yeah. I think she could be really good at that if they wanted someone a little older, because she definitely is a bit older.
Yeah.
I don't know her exact age, but, you know, if you've ever seen Downton, she's definitely one of the older people.
I'm looking at a picture of her now in, like, kind of a gray, like, dress suit kind of thing with a hat, and she looks like that old kind of crusty math teacher that you definitely don't want to, you know, go to their class. Yeah. It would be perfect for Mrs. Dodds.
So she would be a fun one. That literally just came to me as we were recording. Yeah. So,
but I love Tilda Swinton, and she's so good at transforming into different roles too. Oh, like you always know it's her. Like, her face is very unique. So, like, even I can recognize her and everything. But, like, she really transforms into roles. So
I think she would have good fun with it too.
Yeah,
Mrs. Dodds only appears a couple of times. She wouldn't have to spend a ton of time on set,
and she'd probably be super into turning into a fury,
right? Like, come on.
Yeah, that's awesome. Although she is busy, she'll be busy playing Lucifer very soon in Sandman.
That's
so
true.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool. Lots of underworld roles. We'll just throw them all in there.
Yeah.
Okay, next is Chiron. And this one... So I have to admit, I'm not going to tell you everything, but, like, I put in a lot of very weird, slightly offensive things into Google to try to find some of the looks that I was going for some of these actors. Yeah, they were not super flattering or nice, and I apologize to everybody who came up in my Google searches. I'll just say one of them was for Gabe, like, actors with punchable faces. And I felt very guilty putting that in. But I was trying to find somebody specific for this role.
There's a look for every role and a role for every look. Yes. So, you know, you just kind of... Sometimes you got to know what you're looking for.
Yeah. So I was really struggling with Chiron because it was very... Like, I knew what kind of vibe I wanted for him. Somebody kind of fatherly, but, like, not, like, a dad. Somebody who's, like, a professor, you know, that fits that role very well. And I was like, oh, my God, Anthony Stewart Head. Wait, he was in the movies. And I was like, I can't do him. So I literally looked up who looks good in tweed. And it worked because I decided on Matt Smith, who is 39 years old. One, he looks great in tweed. As the doctor, he kind of had this loving, warm kind of air about him. And he's got sort of a long face, which, like, you know, I don't want to say he has a horse face, but, like, I think that his look would actually go very well with being a centaur.
Yeah.
So I think he's very cute. So.
He's a very good actor, too. Yeah, so yeah. I would be more than happy to have
Although
him.
He's going to be busy in the Game of Thrones prequel pretty soon, so...
Man.
Yeah.
He's got time, right?
Right. He's got the box. He's got the police box.
Right.
The TARDIS, so.
Right. That's what
he'll find time.
Yeah, mine, it's funny enough because Karen put all of her picks in the doc first, and I refused to look at it until after I had already made all of my picks, which actually has a really funny consequence coming up that, trust me, it's worth it. But I didn't think of tweed, but I was like, okay, I need, like, somebody who's got, like, fatherly energy but isn't necessarily a father, somebody who can, like, lead the way, who's always kind of been around and been very good at with, like, being a guiding force, and I settled on Luke Wilson, who, I forgot, recently has been the dad on Stargirl.
Oh, really?
I think he's playing her dad.
Wait, this is not who I thought you meant. Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's been playing the dad on Stargirl on the CW, but he is the good guy from Legally Blonde. He's been in a couple of my favorite movies. There's one called Alex and Emma with Kate Hudson. She plays a stenographer, and I haven't watched it in ages, but it's one of my faves. I've always kind of been a Luke Wilson fangirl. He always plays these very sweet, quiet guys. And I think he could bake a very interesting Chiron just because he's very leadery. I think he has that energy, and I think he could be a calming presence for all of those kids at camp.
Two things. One, I do like that. I think he does play very warm characters a lot of the time.
And he's 50, so he's a little older.
Yeah. I actually really like him for Paul Blofus. I think he would make a good Paul. And I think he would play very well against Melissa Ponzio, who is definitely going to be Sally. You said Luke Wilson, and I pictured Luke Evans, who is very different. He played Gaston in the live-action Beauty and the Beast. But I kind of don't hate that.
Right. It's not... That wouldn't be the worst.
Yeah. Also, when you Google him, there are several shirtless pictures.
Yeah.
Just...
Luke Evans is always taking his shirt off.
He's a very attractive man.
He was in Immortals. He played Zeus in Immortals. So, like,
he's kind of got a bit of that, like, otherworldly, godly thing about him. I'm pretty sure he was Zeus. He could definitely pull it off. I don't doubt that at all.
Oh, my God. Okay, I just saw your pick for the next one, which I did not mean to look at, but now I'm kind of obsessed. Okay, so next is Mr. D, who is actually one of the very big roles and one of the gods that we haven't actually talked about yet. So I would love, we're going to do a deep dive on him probably pretty soon, definitely ahead of like the show airing, obviously, but I would like to get to him very soon. But he was one of the ones that we were like, oh, we'd want to do an individual episode on him, but kind of ran out of time. So unfortunately, he gets lumped in here. Now, I really, really liked Stanley Tucci as Mr. D.
I had a hard time trying to think of anybody else.
He was so, so good. And fortunately slash unfortunately, TikTok ruined me on this because I saw somebody fan cast Mr. D and I cannot get this out of my head now. So it was at Prime Innister on TikTok where I saw it first, and she said Jason Mantzoukas, and now I can't picture anybody else. So he was the Janet's boyfriend in The Good Place. Like, he's been in a million things. He wasn't he on Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I believe so. If this is the human, I think he is.
You definitely, like, if you see his face, you know who this is.
He was on Parks and Rec. He played Dennis Feinstein.
He plays a lot of similar roles where he's kind of over the top. He's a voice on Big Mouth, which I love. And
I think he's done quite a bit of voice work.
And he's Greek, so, like, that was another reason why they picked him. And I feel like Mr. D's, like, kind of abrasive character. Like, Jason's got kind of an abrasive voice. Like, he's got a very recognizable voice. And he can play, like, a little gross, a little bit soft. Like, being Janet's boyfriend on The Good Place, he was kind of a dumb guy. And, like, kind of sweet, but also, like, a little scary sometimes.
Yeah.
So I just feel like he could play Mr. D very well. But now I saw your pick, and now I kind of want that, too.
Okay, so since we can't have Stanley Tucci, because I've decided we're not allowed to have him, I guess. They can cast Stanley Tucci.
Will not complain.
Ecstatic. He was lovely.
Yeah.
Since I can't have him, I was trying to think of somebody who kind of gives off maybe a little bit of that energy, like the bit of a chaotic, drunk disaster.
That is an excellent way to describe this person.
Yeah. And I, of course, pictured Jack Black.
Yeah.
Who is so lovely.
Yeah.
I just think he would be an insanely funny and really entertaining Mr. D. He does a lot of, like, adult fare, especially when it comes to his music and stuff. I feel like he leans more heavy on adult stuff as Tenacious D.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to movies, he seems to really like making kids projects.
Yeah.
Between, like, School of Rock and, you know, he's done all kinds, you know, the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Yep.
That's his voice. So I just feel like he would be a delight as Mr. D, kind of an in-between character. Like, he's, you know, the god of wine and all of that. So, of course, he's got a bit of that, like, gross adult energy.
Yeah.
But it's in a kid's movie, and he gets to make stupid jokes about people's names. And I know Jack Black would have a blast.
Yeah. There would probably be a lot of improv and stuff there. And I feel like that would work really well with Mr. D. I always picture Mr. D as, like, kind of an over-the-top, like, large guy, because he's, as the god of wine and, like,
I always, when you picture, like, a god of wine or something, I always think of it being kind of like a god of plenty. And when you think of somebody like that, you think of him being a little more robust, having a little bit of a belly and a little bit almost jolly.
Yeah.
Because they're drunk. And when are you going to be your happiest? It's, you know, probably when you've had a little too much to drink. So that's, that's exactly what I've kind of pictured, too.
Yeah. And I think he would look great in that leopard print shirt, so he could really pull it off.
He could pull it off, for sure.
I want this.
I did throw another name in here.
Yeah.
It's more because of the Nick Frost angle.
Yeah.
If you went with Nick Frost as Gabe, I feel like Simon Pegg has to show up somewhere.
Right?
And who better to play Mr. D than Simon Pegg? It would be a completely off the wall random choice.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like it kind of being like a Heath Ledger as the Joker kind of choice,
yeah,
where you might not necessarily see it, but as soon as he kind of steps into it, he could totally take it and run with it. So
He's, again, off the wall.
And Simon Pegg, I haven't seen a ton of his movies, but, like, he sometimes does play, like, a little bit more of the straight man, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like Nick Frost does a lot of physical comedy a lot of the times, and he's kind of over the top. And then, even though Simon Pegg is very funny, a lot of the times it's him reacting to, like, completely ridiculous situations.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like him being able to, like, walk that line would work really well for Mr. D.
I mean, even as Scotty in Star Trek, yeah. like, he can kind of play the straight man to the funny. I would say at World's End, he has a little bit more of the straight role, and everybody else is causing chaos around him.
Yeah.
Same with Shaun of the Dead. He's kind of the guy trying to survive, and then you've got all this insanity around him. So yeah, I think it could work. Again, it would be off the wall. I like Jack Black a little more, but I had to throw it in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just saw it.
Yeah.
That is insane. This is complete
happenstance, and it's so weird that we both found her because she is not, like, a face I would have picked out without, like, looking at a list of people.
Me neither, but, like, she's so perfect, right?
I agree.
Okay, let's just say it. Yeah. So, Clarice, again, this was, like, one of the ones I was really worried about because I actually have a very vivid idea of what I want Clarice to look like in my head. I want her to be a little overweight. I want her to be a little muscular. I want her to be tall and imposing. And even though she's about the same age as Percy, I want her to look older. And I was like, I don't know that many, like, 12-year-old girls who aren't very tiny, very cute, who don't play the typical very girly kind of roles. So I looked at a list. I found a list of, like, you know, I think it was like 30 under 30 or like 30 under, you know, 18 or something. I don't know. I was
looking for teen actresses and went from there. Yeah. So, yep.
Then I scrolled by Ella J. Bosco, who is Cassandra Cain from Birds of Prey, and she's 15 years old. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Now, I will say, I did the exact same thing. I was scrolling down a list, and I saw her face, and I was like, oh my gosh, she would be perfect. Now, I will say this. Ella J is not by any stretch of the imagination overweight.
No.
But her face is very round.
Yeah.
So she gives the impression of being a bigger girl. Like, you can kind of see in Birds of Prey, she wears really baggy clothes. So, like, it kind of hides her shape, which, you know, you could definitely lean that way for Clarice, too. Mm-hmm. But she has a very round face. So it gives you a bit of that impression of her being a bigger, you know, more stocky, sturdy kind of girl. And
I think sturdy is, like, the best. Yeah. Like, cause she's not, like, wafer thin.
No,
but she's
not.
Also not, like, you know, overweight or anything. Right.
So, like, I personally would love them to find an unknown who has a little bit of a weight, you know, a little bit of weight to him, because Clarice is not supposed to be your typical beautiful girl. What they did to Clarice in the movies is probably one of the characters I was most angry about. That actress did a great job.
Yeah.
But they kind of completely changed. That actress is, like, model beautiful.
Yeah.
And
they got her personality, right. But
and that's just not Clarice. Like, yeah. She's not supposed to be the you know, the waif, the one who looks like, you know, every Hollywood actress, every blonde Hollywood actress you can think of. I want her to be more. And, yeah, Ella J is just, she
that
has,
so funny.
And she has the right energy.
In Birds of Prey, she's very tough. She's very snarky. She's a pain in the ass. And I just, like, oh.
That's Clarice.
Not only does she look good, like, she would make a good Clarice, but, like, we already know she can play that kind of attitude, and I am here for it.
Yeah.
This is one of the ones that I feel very strongly about now.
And funny enough, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And we picked her out completely separately, and it just cracked me up.
Out of everyone in the universe.
When I came to the dock to put it in, I looked down, I went, are you kidding me? Like, I literally died.
That's so funny.
I do have a second pick, though. If you've ever seen the Christmas Chronicles on Netflix, Darby Eliza Camp plays a little girl who's brother and her get into some chaos with Santa, and it's really cute. She, again, has a bit of a round face. She's got really big, kind of out-of-control curly hair at times. And I feel like she could embody Clarice without necessarily having to be, you know, too big. But she just has a little more sturdiness to her. And I think that if they dressed her up the right way and kind of, you know,
I think she could handle it. She's a really good actress from what I've seen. And I think she's turning 15 in July, so she's right around the right age. If she could have been a year or two older, that would have been better, because I always picture Clarice just a little older than Percy. Like, she just looks a little older than Percy.
Yeah, because she's just, you know, growth spurt. Right, exactly. Like, she's just bigger.
She's the child of Aries, so I picture they're all, like, these giants compared to, you know, everybody else. But yeah, so I think she could definitely do the role, but Ella J is...
I could almost see her as Rachel.
I could do that. Because of her
crazy red curly hair, like...
I could definitely handle that. Yeah. Because she's just really good, so I'm game.
Okay. Next up is Luke. And I don't know how you're going to react to this, but I have some pretty good points.
Okay.
Okay. So, hear me out.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Tremblay.
Okay.
Now, first of
all, him and Percy are going to be exactly the same height.
I mean, that's probably fair. So my first thing when I came across him was he looks too young. Like, he looks very young. But if you go to his Instagram, the last picture he posted, he looks quite a bit older. Like, he's 15 now. He looks like a teenager. He looks like he's like 16 years old.
Okay.
And the thing that I want with Luke is for him to feel older and wiser than the other kids. And Jacob has been acting for so long, and he's such a good actor, that I think that his gravitas as an actor would bring that to the role. And I think that the other kids, as actors and as their characters, could look up to him in the same way that they look up to Luke. So
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I really do love Jacob Tremblay.
Yeah.
You know, I would be totally fine.
He's very
okay,
good.
I can see it a little.
Did you see find his Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, he looks a lot older there.
Honestly, he looks like an old Nico.
Really?
In this picture to me, like,
yeah.
He looks a little sad. Granted, we meet Nico when he's a little younger, but
yeah,
he plays like older Nico in my brain. Anyway. I definitely see where you're coming from. I do appreciate he's a really talented kid, and I would love to see him do a project like this, because he's done a lot of smaller things, and, like, he's done some voiceover stuff. I think he was the voice of Luca in the Disney movie just a couple, like, last year or the year before.
But I don't know if I realized that.
I just kind of glanced at it and went, oh, yeah, that is him. But, like, he's done some other things, like, projects. But I know him from Room when he was really little.
Right.
And that movie is insane. So, yeah. But he's really good. So, I could definitely see it. For me, I wanted to skew a little older. So, I was scrolling through teenage actors, and this kid popped up, and honestly, I didn't recognize him at all. Didn't know what he was from, didn't know anything about him. But he had, like, the blonde, almost surfer boy look that I've always had for Luke.
Right.
Like, I want him to be, like, if Chris Hemsworth was 15 years old, this is what he would look like. That's Luke for me. So, this kid's really close. His name is Aiden Flowers. He's done some work. He's been a working actor for a while. He played young Klaus in the originals, which is just funny because Klaus is a bad guy who thinks he's the good guy.
Yeah.
And it just works so well for Luke that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even. And I think he's got the look. I'm pretty sure he's, you know, a pretty talented kid. I haven't seen him in anything other than the originals. But there is just this picture in his IMDb page with his hair really short. And he's got this look on his face. It's where you link to.
Yeah.
He's just got this look on his face that has trouble written behind it. And I'm like... If you scroll back in his pictures, you'll see more of, like, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid who's, like, you know, totally cool and is going to be your bestie, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. When he smiles, I think it's really genuine. So I'm like, yeah, he could play Luke.
Even his main picture on his IMDb actually screams Luke to me, because you're right, like, the kind of shortish blonde hair is what I picture Luke. I also picture Luke with, like, a very pointed face for some reason, and he has that. Like, he has a pretty defined jaw. His face isn't really long, but I feel like he has a little bit of a pointy chin. And as soon as I opened that picture, I was like, oh, like, I get it. And he looks maybe a little bit younger here than I think he does in his main IMDb picture.
Yeah.
But both of them, I'm like, I could really see him playing Luke.
Yeah, I think that picture is probably a few years old at this point, the one that I linked to. But yeah, he just, he has the look for me. So, I don't know. But I think he'd be good.
Yeah, definitely.
And I need him to be a little older. He's supposed to be a little older, so that's why I kind of leaned toward I was looking for 17. I was like, anywhere around 17 is probably about right. So he's 18, so it's...
Yeah, mine felt a little young, and like, again, Jacob looks very young, but I was like, I feel like the reason behind choosing him is almost as good as what he looks like, so...
No, I agree. His experience would definitely lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're coming to a close here. We've got two more left, and this next one is Medusa. And kind of like Nancy, I kind of want Medusa to be stunt casting, like you were saying, because I think she's a fairly important role. We had talked about, okay, if we're going to cast Medusa, are we going to cast, like, Echidna and some of the other monsters and stuff? And we decided no, because they're not quite as important in mythology as Medusa is. Like, Medusa is talked about a lot. And I wanted somebody very beautiful, and I wanted somebody with insanely curly hair. I loved Uma Thurman in the movies because
she did really well,
I just really like her in general. And I didn't necessarily love the way they did the snakes in her hair. I kind of want the person who plays Medusa to have curly hair with snakes in it. I feel like that could look very good. And so the first person I thought of was Helena Bonham Carter, because she's good at playing crazy people. She has insane hair.
She's made a career out of playing crazy people.
Yeah, she's very beautiful. She's 56. I don't think age particularly matters with Medusa. You know, if they want to cast a lot of Hollywood actors and actresses just look beautiful no matter what their age anyway. So it kind of doesn't matter. But I feel like she could bring a lot of weight to that role, and I think she would have a lot of fun doing that.
I agree. She's an obvious pick for any of the female adult monster-y characters.
Yeah.
Like, you could make her into anybody.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of those people who can kind of just be whoever you want. So I absolutely agree with you.
Now, I did have a pretty big alternate for this one as well, because I was trying to think of... I know a lot of people see Medusa as a black woman, because there's a lot of talk about maybe Medusa kind of comes from this idea of the Greeks seeing, like, African women with braids or locks. And so Medusa is portrayed as a black woman a lot. And I was like, okay, that's a really interesting concept. And if they have naturally curly hair, like, that still kind of falls in line with what I was thinking. And I was going through pictures, and for some reason, Kerry Washington jumped out at me. And I don't think she's a super obvious pick, but again, very beautiful. Like, her with her natural hair, I think, would fit really well with the image. She's also good at being a little bit, like... just a little bit crazy sometimes. I haven't seen a ton of stuff she's been in, but, like, Scandal in particular kind of jumps to mind. And she's got, like, some crazy eyes sometimes, so I feel like she could do a good job.
Oh, yeah. Toward the end of Scandal...
Did she go off the rails?
Things were batty. Well, like, some of the stuff that she was having to deal with at that time, like, it would drive anyone crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she kind of had to get a little crazier toward the end there. But, yeah, I 100% could see her doing this and doing a really good job.
Yeah, and she's 45, so, you know, kind of in the middle there. And
My pick is a little older. She's a little more seasoned. Basically, I was looking through pictures, and I found a picture of this actress. Like, I know her with long, flowy, straight hair, but I found a picture of her with really tight, curly hair. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, yes. My pick is Jane Seymour.
I was like, why do I know this name?
Well, yeah, Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, on top of a million other things, because she's been everywhere.
Well, that, and don't watch Wedding Crashers if you have, like, nice feelings about
she's
Dr. Quinn.
Her character on Wedding Crashers is a
I was, like, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Traumatized by that.
Yeah. I was really looking for an actress that was a bit older, not because I wanted Medusa to be old, but I wanted, kind of like you were saying with Tremblay.
Yeah.
I wanted somebody whose experience in the industry would kind of lend itself to that old, ancient feel that I think Medusa has.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane Seymour was one that just kind of jumped I was looking through a list of 60s, 70s old actresses because I wanted someone a little older. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, the minute she jumped out at me, I was just like, she could do this. Mm-hmm. She could do it so well. And again, it's basically like one episode.
Right.
Medusa's head shows up again, but like, they wouldn't need her head to do all of that. So basically, she would have a very short stint. But such an iconic, interesting mm-hmm. character. Yeah, I just think she could be a lot of fun.
I think there's something to be said for having somebody who's both older and timeless, because it would feel ancient, her being Medusa. She's a monster who's been around for centuries.
Yeah.
And yet, she doesn't necessarily look like she's centuries old. So I feel like that would be a very good mix.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for, too. Yeah. Just timeless.
Yeah. So Charon is the last one on our list. And this one, I kind of felt a weird amount of pressure to cast because, again, I feel like I have a very specific image of him in my head. Now, I believe in the books, but also in the comments, he is described as a black man. So, like, I wanted to go in that direction specifically. And I was trying to find a black man who's, like, a little bit on the thinner side, who looks good in a suit, who has, like, kind of a skeletal face. Like, I wanted his cheekbones to be very pronounced. And I came across Mahershala Ali, who I just adore. He's 48, and I feel like he looks great in a suit, and he's got a very imposing air about him, so I think he would look very, very good. Now, that was not my first choice. Oh. My first choice was Doug Jones, who I love, and you've probably seen him in something. He was in Buffy, he was in Teen Wolf, he was in Hellboy, the first movies by Guillermo del Toro. He does a lot of character work. He is a very thin, tall, skeletal human being. I feel like he would just embody that, like, kind of immortal being who ferries people across the River Styx so well. Yeah. Like, he could really bring a lot to that role. And if they wanted to put him in prosthetics, make him look more skeletal when he's actually in the underworld, like, he would fit with that very well. So,
okay. So, I picked somebody, and then listening to you describe him, a human jumped in my head.
Okay.
And I knew exactly who I wanted to play him.
Okay.
So my initial pick, I'll just say, was Jay Baruchel.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comedian. He voiced Hiccup for How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
He's done all kinds of things. I'm sure if you look
him up, you'll recognize him. He's also got that, like, thin sort of, like, yeah, I could see that.
So, and I was thinking, like, he's working the desk at a music company. Who would kind of, like, slide right into place without feeling out of place at all. I feel like he's young enough that he could do that, but also can kind of give, like, an older air if he needed to. I was wrong.
Okay.
It should not be him.
Okay.
It should be this gentleman. I completely forgot that Charon is described as being black.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just was looking for skinny guys. Like,
yeah.
I didn't really care about, their color. I just was looking for a skinny guy. And as you're describing it, this gentleman's face popped into my head. His name is Lance Reddick.
Okay.
Specifically, the visual that pops into my head, he's played a lot of roles, but he plays a cop on West Wing, and I knew exactly what episode. I went and looked it up and pulled his face.
We actually talked about him because one of our listeners had written in about him, and I couldn't remember if we had talked about him for Charon, or I also suggested Thanatos, who's the god of death, because I also feel like his look would fit really well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But no, his face just popped in my brain, and I was like, he has that tall, bony, his facial structure, like his cheekbones are razor sharp.
Yeah.
I think he would be an incredible Charon. I have no other options at this point. Jay Baruchel would have been a weird pick, but I was having trouble kind of picturing somebody for Charon. Like, I had, everybody else, I kind of had an idea of what I was going for, but this one I was just kind of lost, and I didn't want to do too much research and, like, influence myself by looking at the description from the books, because we know that Rick is really open to just about anybody playing anybody, as long as their energy's right. So I was kind of going off of that. And, Lance Reddick. Reddick, he's my guy. I don't want anybody.
I also kept picturing Sterling K. Brown, too, because I feel like He's a little meatier, but like...
I is it sad that I'm like, don't waste him on Karen?
Yeah, I know. Give him a much bigger role.
I want him to have something really meaty and fun. And yeah. I'm trying to think of a god. Because he's a god. The man's a god.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a god he could play. And I'm like, I don't know. But
anyone. All of them.
Right? Just put him anywhere. I love him. He could be an interesting choice for Hermes.
Hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, but Sterling K. Brown could play anyone. But yeah, that's my pick for Karen.
Yep, awesome. So those were our fan casts. Let us know how you feel about them. Did we hit any on the head? Do you think we're crazy for thinking about some of the other ones? You know, we'll probably do fan casting again in the future for future seasons, but I think for now, like, that's going to wrap up how we feel about that. And then any announcements that come out, we'll probably talk more in detail about, you know, oh my gosh, they're the perfect person. Why didn't we think of them? Or something like that.
Our hopes are one by one dashed for all of the people we've mentioned. But again, the perfect actor shows up for each of these roles. And I mean, I have no idea what their goal is. Like, I don't know if a lot of these people are going to be unknowns. Like, we know for the kids, they wanted them to be, like, somewhat unknown, not household names. We knew that they were kind of going for kids who had acted before, but that weren't necessarily, you know, recognizable on sight. And they definitely found that in our trio, and we're all really excited about this. I don't know what they're necessarily thinking for Clarice or for Luke or, you know, they might be going for somebody slightly more recognizable. So it could be one of these guys. It could be somebody we've never heard of.
Yeah. Do they want star power in the show, or do they think that, you know, to save money, they cast somebody who's not quite as big and just know that the Percy Jackson fandom's going to watch regardless? Oh, yeah. So. Yeah.
So it could be a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun watching all of this new casting come, you know, come alive as we find them out one by one or in a big lump in a couple of weeks. Who knows? But yeah, it'll definitely be fun.
Cool. And keep an eye on subjectifymedia.com because I will be keeping the post updated that I have with the trio on there as new people are confirmed. I didn't put Simon Chin on there because we don't know his role. So I'm waiting to know like exactly who's playing who. And I will keep that updated and I will link to that in the show notes as well. But now it's time for more Battle of the Labyrinth.
Yes. Okay. So we are up to chapter 5, entitled Nico Buys Happy Meals for the Dead. And here we go. Another night, another dream. Percy gets a glimpse of Luke kneeling in front of Cronus' golden coffin. We learn that they have a spy keeping an eye on camp, and they know that a quest is about to be launched into the labyrinth. They aren't worried. They say everything is going to plan. Then Kelly, the Empusa from school, enters the room, flirts with Luke, and senses Percy's presence. He ducks out of the dream moments before he swears she was about to sink her fangs into his flesh. Percy awakens to see the fountain from the night before glowing brighter than the night before. He doesn't even need a drachma or anything to connect to Nico's location at this time. He is present as Nico digs up a grave, tosses a couple of Happy Meals in, pours in some Coke, and then has a chat... Coca-Cola. And then has a chat with the Theseus, whom Percy remarks is much younger and normal-looking than he imagined. Nico wants confirmation that a soul for a soul will save his sister, but Theseus is all warnings instead. They do get Theseus to admit that a soul for a soul should be enough, but not before someone very powerful tries to get to Nico. Percy breaks the connection and slashes the fountain in two with Riptide. Then he sits there all night thinking about it. The next day, it's time to enter the labyrinth, but not before Percy gives Chiron a heads up about his vision of Luke and Cronus chatting. He also lets him know what Juniper saw Quintus up to, just in case. Chiron admits to wanting to keep an enemy closer and allowing Quintus to stay till he proves one way or the other.
Yeah. I love that you had to, like, specify Coca-Cola.
I just realized that he pours the Happy Meals in and then he pours some Coke and I'm like, I should have said Coca-Cola.
I don't think anybody would assume Nico was pouring anything else on the grave.
What else is going to raise people from the dead?
I mean, that's fair. That's a good assumption.
It wouldn't have been false logic for Nico to think that either. So I was like, you know what? We're just gonna say Coca-Cola right now and stipulate that's where we were going.
That's so funny.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, which is
Percy's first dream.
Yeah.
He basically has two visions in this chapter, but the first is an actual dream.
Right. And prophecy count number 18.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
But he sees Luke in front of the golden coffin that we are well familiar with now, and he is completely healed.
Yeah.
And is looking great, and that's, you know, pretty foreboding at this point. Mm-hmm. If Kronos is powerful enough to raise Luke from the broken heap Percy saw him as last, that's not a good sign.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree.
Kronos made a point. He was trying to convince Luke, because Luke was hemming and hawing about something during the scene. And Kronos makes a point to say, "You are now beyond harm."
I caught that, too.
Yeah. And that definitely raises some eyebrows. Clearly, Luke has a little more going for him than a normal demigod and a normal mortal at this point. I wouldn't go so far as to say he's immortal, but it sort of seems like there might be something in that realm.
Yeah, he's definitely being protected by Kronos, and as Kronos gains more power, you know, that protection keeps growing too, and it's definitely worrisome, I guess is what we can say. And actually, this whole, like, dream sequence was very scary. Like, I was worried a lot of the time because we learned that there are still spies at Camp Half-Blood, and that Kronos and the others wanted them to go on a quest into the labyrinth to fulfill their half of the bargain. And I'm like, what bargain is this?
Right.
And he also mentions how they only need one more heart to join the cause for Kronos. And again, don't actually remember what's going on here. But my feelings are that, like, Nikos is the heart they want to join the cause. He will be powerful enough to kind of set Kronos over the edge so that he can rise for sure. And is the bargain that they made with King Minos, who we know is the ghost that's talking to Nico. So it's all very interesting and scary.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, I don't remember all the details here either, but yeah, Nico feels like the right heart that they need to kind of pull over there, and he's teetering on the precipice right now because of Bianca. It's definitely a fraught situation, and I was a bit scared of Kronos and all of his planning and everything going perfectly to plan. Like, I don't want to hear that. No, no, no.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, and Percy finds it interesting, too, that Kelly could sense his presence.
Yeah.
And she says, like, Luke, your senses are waning. And I'm like, that's not good. But, yeah, she's so can pinpoint where Percy's standing that she, like, runs directly at him. And is ready to...
Imagine how scary that'll be in the show, like, looking directly into camera and then launching at it. Like, that could be a really scary moment. It also confirms that Kelly's alive. She's perfectly fine.
Yep.
And I thought that this was a very interesting scene, that if this was like a YA book or like an adult book, it would have had very specific connotations to it, because she's wearing like this cute red dress and she's obviously flirting with Luke. And it felt very like siren-y to me, which we kind of know as an Impusa, like, is kind of her vibe anyway.
Yeah.
She's definitely trying to get with Luke, and he's like, I know what you do. I want nothing to do with you, which is honestly really smart.
Yeah. So that whole Kelly thing, real creepy. But that wakes Percy up, and he's laying in his bed, and he realizes that the room is a lot lighter than it should be. So that draws him to the fountain, and the fountain is glowing. And I think he says it's almost like vibrating. Like, it's so alive and needs to show him whatever it needs to show him, that he doesn't even have to throw a drachma in. He doesn't even have to say the words, and poof, he's being drawn into another Iris message.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because I believe it's not technically an Iris message, because he's not throwing the coin in. He's not, like,
calling on Iris.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So this is some other form of communication through water, through the fountain. So is this, like, from Poseidon? Is it from somebody else? Like, who else would have control over this in order to be able to show him what Nico is up to? Who is so invested in what Nico is doing that they want Percy, of all people, to know about it?
And it's clearly somebody who's not
entirely not on Percy's side, because Nico has plans to exchange Bianca's soul for Percy's. You can already kind of tell. So, like, it's not somebody who's entirely on Nico's side, because otherwise they wouldn't be telling Percy this.
Right.
It's giving away the, you know, giving away the goat. It's giving away the whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily seem like somebody who's up to no good. Like, it seems like they might have some difficult motives. I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint who's doing this.
I also found it really interesting that even though Nico is kind of teetering on the edge right now, he's doing all of this because he wants a second opinion, because he doesn't really like the stuff that King Minos is feeding him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really want to hurt Percy, but he also really wants his sister. So he's looking for a second opinion. And I was like, that makes me feel a little better about, like, where he is mentally right now. I also found the image of him and Luke to be very interesting, because Luke is dressed in all white and Nico is dressed in all black, and yet Luke is the bad guy and Nico is the good guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was very interesting to kind of play on that.
These two visions of Percy.
Yeah.
He's seeing two people, yeah, in, like, opposite. Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very cinematic.
It is.
I can't wait. Anyway, okay, so Nico is raising a dead person in this vision, and we quickly find out that it's Theseus.
Yeah.
The Theseus. And I have to say that I love Percy's observation that, like, he's a lot younger and more normal. Like, you know, we think of Hercules and Theseus, and we think of these guys as being, like, bigger than life. But Theseus was probably closer to Percy's age, and even if he was a little older, like, closer to being a normal human than a god.
Right.
And I just thought it was really kind of poignant that Percy was like, he almost kind of looks like me. Like, this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just one of my favorite kind of bits of this chapter. Theseus recognizes the ghost with Nico. We know the ghost is King Minos, and it makes sense that he would recognize him since he's the one.
He can't quite put his finger on it just yet, but he's like, no, I know you. And Minos is like, no, you don't.
Right.
No, you don't.
You have no idea. And then he starts changing the subject.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're focused on this. A soul for a soul. That's what we want to know. Yeah. No. So Theseus definitely has an idea. And so if you didn't already know it was King Minos, that would be a bit of a telltale sign right there.
Yeah.
We've kind of touched on the soul for a soul. He's definitely looking to use Percy. Not, I don't necessarily think it's vengeance or anything, but it's, you know, Percy is the reason she's not here, so I'm going to use his. And he already knows it has to be a soul of real substance that Hades wasn't already going to claim. So that makes sense. Okay, he keeps talking about the labyrinth quest helping him find his sister. And I was curious if we know that Luke is kind of embarking on a labyrinth quest, or he's sending people into the labyrinth. So I'm kind of curious if he's talking about Percy's labyrinth quest, or if he's talking about the other one.
Or his own?
Like Luke's. Whoever Luke's sending in. Because, like, is he talking about Percy and company being in the labyrinth, getting him closer to raising Bianca, or is it whatever Luke's up to that would get him closer to raising Bianca? It was just one of those things. Maybe I was confused, but I kind of wondered, like, is he talking about Percy, or is he talking about whoever else is in the labyrinth trying to get to Daedalus?
Yeah. I don't know.
It's, yeah, just kind of something that stuck out at me. I wasn't really sure. We'll probably, hopefully, get answers soon. We'll see. Right before Percy smashes out of this vision, it glows, like, really super bright, like a god is coming, almost, because that's the only time we've experienced this light before. And I have no idea who that was.
I assume it's Hades, because Hades...
That was the obvious play there.
Yeah, okay. Well, because we also learned that his eyes glow with purple fire when he's mad, and it was like a purple light, so that just made me think of Hades.
Okay. That was the way my brain was going,
yeah.
But I couldn't quite, like, put my finger on, like, it has to be Hades, so I wanted to kind of...
Right, yeah.
Okay.
You skipped over the most important part, which was that Percy hadn't seen a Happy Meal in years. This kid is 15. What are you talking about? Happy Meals had the best burgers. I love the way that they chopped up the onions so small. Like, they were delicious. How have you not had a Happy Meal in years?
Okay, a normal McDonald's cheeseburger is still what I order because the onions are chopped up small.
Yeah.
It tastes really good. So, trust me, I understand. No, it is really kind of random that Percy hasn't seen a Happy Meal. My only guess is he started ordering value meals young because he was always starving.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I was very upset.
I can't just eat a cheeseburger. I need a Big Mac. Like, that's Percy's personality after age 7. Okay, so Percy smashes the fountain. It basically is no more. He splits it in two with Riptide just to stop it from all of the chaos that was going on at the end.
Because it was starting to shake the whole cabin, which is like super powerful. How does that even happen?
Yeah, and Tyson slept through it.
Yeah, right.
That's which we love. But yeah, so he splits it in two, and then he basically just is so unsettled, he can't sleep, so he sits in the corner and just kind of stares at it all night. And is, you know, thinking through all these things that he's seen in the last few hours, and yeah. Okay, so then, next morning, time to enter the labyrinth, as you would love to do with no sleep. And before they actually physically enter the labyrinth, Percy does pull Chiron aside and says, like, I have something I need to talk to you about. And he wanted to make sure to tell Chiron about his dream with Kronos and Luke. And I'm really glad he did, because...
So am I.
It's like, incredibly smart to let him know that everything is going exactly as Luke planned. Like, that's not great.
Yeah.
But, again, they have no other path forward. They have to do this. So, it is what it is. And we also see in those moments that the camp is not going undefended. Like, they're building traps and spikes and trying to find a way to protect themselves from this entrance that they found in campgrounds.
Yeah.
So they'll do their best.
I also found it very interesting that Chiron mentioned Kronos might want Daedalus to make him an automaton body, which is like, ooh, kind of creepy.
Yeah, that's definitely trouble.
But it ties everything together, and I think it makes it very interesting.
It's a very logical conclusion, so it, you know, I would expect that from Chiron, absolutely. And then lastly, Percy also mentions Juniper's thoughts on Quintus and what she's seen him do and how Percy's been feeling about Quintus, and just Chiron basically says, oh yeah, I haven't trusted him since the moment he stepped foot here, but as he hasn't done anything evil or anything, you know, terrible, I want to keep him here and keep an eye on him, because then at least I can see what he's up to.
Yeah.
So at least Chiron is, like, on to him, and Percy can rest easy.
I feel so good about this, because in these books, especially up to this point, like, the miscommunication trope, I guess you would call it that, has been in play a lot. Like, even with Annabeth's prophecy, she's not telling them the whole story. And for once, it feels like Percy actually comes out and tells Chiron almost everything. He doesn't tell him about Nico, which, like, I get. He's trying to protect Nico, so that feels a little bit better. But he actually tells him about the dream with Kronos. He actually tells him about Quintus. And that's a huge one, because he could have, like, maybe offended Chiron by being like, hey, I think this dude is evil. And Chiron could have been like, what are you talking about? No, he's not. And dismissed him. But he's actually right there with him. Like, yeah, no, I thought it was super weird, too, that he showed up and wanted to help. And I've just been keeping an eye on him.
And he's got this pet hellhound.
Yeah. But now I'm like, it's almost too obvious that Quintus is evil.
See, from the beginning of this book, I do not remember who Quintus is. I do not remember his side in all of this. But something about him has always kind of landed on, he's weird but not evil. Like, I don't necessarily know if he's... Clearly he's being set up to be Luke's informant. Like, it looks like that's what he's doing. But it's so obvious that that's where it's pointing.
But I feel a twist coming.
Right, that he might just be a weird old demigod who doesn't have any pull toward Kronos. So we'll find out.
Or maybe who's a little misguided but, like, ultimately good at heart. You know, something like that.
And maybe this whistle that Percy has in his pocket will not be his doom.
Yeah.
Maybe it will be helpful. We'll find out. So let's do favorite quotes. Mine was, at least let me keep the toy. Which, I mean, it's the best part of the Happy Meal.
Yeah.
So I understand why Minos wants the toy.
I just thought it was funny that Minos, of all people, was like, I want the toy.
Like, you're throwing in the food, I get it, but give me the toy.
Yeah.
What was yours?
That's funny, because mine's also very related. It's just the matter-of-fact way that Percy says, Nico had summoned the dead with Coke and cheeseburgers. Like, it was just so funny.
Yeah. No. That scene altogether is just quite hilarious. He's like pouring the Coke into the grave, and it's bubbling up and thickening, and it looks like a grave full of Coke, and, like, that's so funny and just hilarious. And our favorite moments, mine was Nico and his Happy Meals. Just the idea of him raising the dead with Happy Meals is funny to me.
Yeah,
definitely. And I love that Minos is, like, yelling at him the whole time, like, we used to use the blood of our enemies or whatever. And he's like, well, cheeseburgers do better and it's less gross.
Yeah, so we're gonna go exactly. It's such a good kid-friendly way to, like, explain how, you know, sacrifices are made and stuff like that and, like, what he's doing, but, like, in a way that's not traumatizing.
Agreed. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, what was yours?
Mine was just Percy telling Chiron almost everything, you know, his dream about Cronus and Luke and about Quintus. I was just really proud of Percy in that moment.
Agreed. Okay, so now we are on to chapter 6. We meet the god with two faces. Our heroes have taken the plunge and have entered the labyrinth. Things don't go great on this first leg of the trip. As soon as Annabeth suggests something, the labyrinth changes, taking away whatever she mentions or changes whatever she's using to guide her way. They make their way past a dead milkman, and then, from Roman architecture to modern sewer pipes and back again, they soon find themselves in an open room with many doors, and a two-headed god, Janus, blocks the way. Janus erases all the doors but two, and they try to get Annabeth to make a decision by confusing her as much as possible. They do mention a day of reckoning or something close to that coming, where Annabeth will have to make a choice, but they keep things purposely vague. Then Hera shows up and sends Janus on their way, postponing this day of reckoning for Annabeth. The whole crew chows down on sandwiches and lemonade from the Mother Goddess, who offers Annabeth one wish to help on this quest. After some discussion, Annabeth asks for help finding Hephaestus, to which Hera answers that she already has that, and Percy is the one to ask. Percy is understandably confused to all hell. Hera disappears, taking her feast with her, but not before mentioning that they must keep an eye on the minor gods, who are more easily swayed to the wrong side. Okay, so while they're making their way through the labyrinth, we enter this cavern, whatever, that has the Roman paintings on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And Percy notices that the Roman depiction of the gods is markedly different than the Greek versions, and I just thought it was interesting because at first he recognizes that it's Hermes, he recognizes that it's Dionysus, but he's like, but it's totally wrong. And I love that this is like the first inkling we have of the Roman gods being a version of the Greek gods.
Yeah, this whole thing, this whole chapter was very interesting to me because they come across like Roman architecture too. And it's the first time that we've sort of acknowledged that the Roman pantheon exists alongside the Greek pantheon and that it's like slightly different versions of the same gods, which is exactly how it is in history and everything. And I don't necessarily think that it is, but it kind of feels like a hint to the Heroes of Olympus where we get into like the Roman mythology of it all. And I just like the blending of the two. First of all, the labyrinth already fascinating. The fact that it moves, the fact that it's everything is so different. The fact that they can hear people like next to them and above them, like they're going under a bar and there's like people walking over the wooden floor on top of them. All of that is like so interesting to me, but I really loved the blend of Greek and Roman and how the labyrinth kind of shows how old, like different parts of it are different years old. Ages. That was ages. Yeah, it was a weird way to say that, but yeah, pretty much.
I think you're probably right. This is book 4 in this series. Mm-hmm. Rick was probably starting to think about where he was going next, you know, if he was going to be doing more Percy or what he wanted to do. And I can imagine him saying like, you know what would be fun is to play with the Roman gods. Like, maybe he didn't have a fully fledged idea of what the Heroes of Olympus series was going to be about, but maybe he had this idea and was like, I can start kind of working it into just the knowledge that the Roman gods do exist in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, not even with plans to go into the next series, but just acknowledging that Roman mythology still exists. And like, you know, if you're going to talk about Western civilization and the modernization of Greek mythology and how we still incorporate it into our world today, like, you kind of also have to mention the Romans because they were kind of a big deal too.
They did more to expand West than just about anybody in history. So yeah.
And I found that particularly interesting because I think I might pronounce this wrong, or maybe I'm getting this pronunciation from somewhere else. I always thought it was Giannis.
Oh.
But like January is like, that's derivative of Janus or whatever. I don't know if that's how they pronounced it in Buffy, which is where I know him from the most. Episode 206, Halloween, classic episode, wonderful episode. But Janus or Janus or whatever, is a Roman god.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
That's also particularly interesting to me, but I wonder if he must also exist.
I was going
to
say, is there a Greek counterpoint?
I don't know, because when I looked him up, like, it just, the Wikipedia article for him said, like, in Roman mythology and religion,
okay,
he's, you know, this guy.
Well, because I'm curious, I do recall slightly from, like, Heroes of Olympus, them talking about when there isn't a god that has a counterpart, like, the Roman god just kind of, like, fills in, or yeah. The same with the Greek. Like, if there's a Greek god of this, you know, if there's a Greek god of blankets and there isn't a Roman one, that the Greek god would just kind of exist in its place.
Yeah. So just on Wikipedia, it says Janus is how you would pronounce it, which I think is silly.
How many more?
Yeah. But I think the Latin, it's written I-A-N-U-S, and I feel like that'd be like Janus or Janus. So like that's a little bit closer. So maybe that's where I'm getting it from. Here, this is uncited, but it says the ancient Greeks had no equivalent to Janus, whom the Romans claimed distinctly as their own.
But that is interesting, because honestly, I didn't remember Jan. I feel like I need to say it differently now.
I'm sorry.
You're okay. I didn't remember Janus being a Roman god, like, at all. I just assumed, like, he must be Greek. But that's really interesting, and that not only that he appears here in this Roman-esque kind of looking place, but that Hera has power over him, too.
Yeah. And here, I just keep finding stuff. In discussing myths about Janus, one should be careful in distinguishing those which are ancient and originally Latin and those others which were later attributed to him by Greek mythographers. So it might have actually gone the opposite way, where the Romans had him first and then maybe it bled into the Greek culture versus, you know, the opposite way around.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. What we can all agree on is that Janus, however you say it, is a menace.
He is. I actually really liked him. Honestly, because he's crazy.
And I also have trouble. Is Janus a he, or would it be a they? Because there are basically two personalities in one being. So I was having trouble. You can even tell in the recap. I kept kind of using they because I was like, there are two distinct personalities. Right. I want to address them as, like, both of them, but it could also be a he, because he does give off masculine energy, you know.
Yeah, whatever. And I think Percy kept referring to him as he, but I think it would, maybe it's like, you know, he / they pronouns, because he's a he, but he's also kind of two he's, plural. So it would make sense,
yeah. It was just one of those things that kind of felt wrong to say he, but at the same time, they didn't quite feel right either, so I was all confused. So yeah, if you noticed, that was just me trying to glance over it so nobody would notice, skillfully. But yeah, Janus is a menace. He is torturing Annabeth with trying to choose a door, and one personality is telling her everything's going to be fine and just, you know, make the wisest decision, and the other one is screaming, everyone's going to die! Like, you know, super helpful. Super helpful.
To be fair, I don't think he was trying to be helpful.
Right, exactly. Oh, I know. The last thing Janus wants is to be helpful.
Yeah.
But we do learn that Annabeth has some big choice to make coming up. And, you know, it's hard not to wonder if this has something to do with the line of the prophecy that we haven't heard yet.
Right, yeah.
It, you know, it may have something to do with that. Or it could be something completely unrelated that we don't know about. You know, there are some things looming in Annabeth's life, like choices with her dad and where she's living, and she's clearly, like, her and Percy kind of have something going on. Is it something related to that? You know, there's a lot of things. We know she just kind of made the decision not to be a hunter, so she's kind of got some stuff related to that hanging out there, too.
Right.
So, there's a lot of things that she could be debating between, or, you know, all that. Just good to keep in mind. I think the next bit we want to talk about, because Janus is still torturing Annabeth when Hera arrives on the scene.
Yes. I was immediately like, oh no, Hera.
Oh god, everybody, you know, gird your loins.
Yeah. I thought that was so interesting, because I talked about this a couple episodes ago. She really scares me. Like, she's one of the gods that really scares me, because in every iteration, like, every story about her, she's just mean, and she doesn't get along with Hercules, and she doesn't like Zeus's other demigod children, which, like, can't really blame her. but she's also very intelligent, very conniving, a very petty kind of person. And at first I was like, wait a second, why is she being so helpful? And then Percy basically calls her out on it, which I actually really liked. And she's being helpful because she wants to keep her family together. And I was like, this makes sense. That is exactly the kind of motivation that she would have. So even though she probably does, she clearly hates Percy. Like, she doesn't mind Annabeth, but she clearly hates Percy.
Percy mentions Talia, and she's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she's like, oh, and then there's Poseidon's ilk.
Yeah.
Like, you.
Yeah.
No, she's not happy with him.
So there's still a bit of that Hera there, but, like, at least I understand her motivations in this moment.
Yeah, and, I mean, she mentions in the scene that she's the goddess of marriage, and it makes sense that being the goddess of that specific, you know, human thing, she would want to keep her family together. Mm-hmm. So that all fits her personality and her existence, really. Yeah, she arrives on scene. She sends Giannis packing, is like, get out of here. She tells Annabeth that she has only delayed this choice, that it wasn't the right time for her to make it, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she needs to be prepared for it. So that's all looming and interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see what that is. She does feed them, which is quite nice. I love that Percy kind of mentions, like, I was more hungry than I thought. Like, wow. It just was, for me, it was a reminder of time in the labyrinth being such a fickle thing, and that they may have been in there for 8 hours or something, and because their bodies don't know it yet, it isn't until food is offered that Percy realizes he's starving. Like, it's time is such a funny thing.
They've also been walking a lot, so. Right.
Yeah, just marching through the labyrinth trying to find their way. So, yeah, I thought that was worth talking about. I personally did not like that Hera rushed Annabeth's choice. Hera offers Annabeth basically one wish, and Annabeth, at Hera's insistence, she kind of says, like, I think you should use it to find Hephaestus. Finding Hephaestus is going to be really good for you, because he'll know more about what's going on with Daedalus, and that's where you're ultimately trying to go.
Right.
Solid advice. Totally cool. But then the minute Annabeth makes the wish, Hera says, oh, you've already got that. That was a foolish wish to make.
So I actually kind of felt the opposite about this. I thought Hera was being super helpful, and she was giving her some free pieces of advice, which was very good. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Annabeth wished to learn how to get through the labyrinth. She didn't wish to go to Hephaestus.
I thought she wished for a guidance to find Hephaestus.
Okay, so we just looked it up, and
okay,
we're both right.
Yeah, we were both right. Hera says, if anyone would have kept up with Daedalus and could tell you his fate, it's Hephaestus. So Annabeth responds, but how do we get there? That's my wish. I want a way to navigate the labyrinth. So you were right, but her goal is to find Hephaestus.
Right.
So we are looking for a way through the labyrinth.
So I think Annabeth's wording is what bothered Hera so much, because then she says, Percy already knows how to do that. And I'm just like, how?
Wait, what?
Yeah, and Percy's also like, wait, what?
Percy's like, I don't see any water, Hera. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. And so Percy clearly knows something and doesn't realize that he knows something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first instinct, of course, is, does it have something to do with the whistle?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is the Hellhound could know how to navigate the labyrinth.
Being an underground hell creature.
And being able to, like, shadow travel and stuff, like, maybe that's tied in together.
But we know once he uses the whistle, it's done for. So he either then has to keep Mrs. O'Leary with them.
On a leash.
Or, like, let her go and have used up his turn.
Or maybe it has to do with Nico. Like, Nico is capable of Hades' powers include being able to navigate underground, so maybe, like, Nico will be able to help them.
Well, the only other thing, and honestly, I do not remember how this shakes out. I do not remember what Percy knows. I'm kind of curious if Percy maybe can use groundwater and, like,
the flow of groundwater as a way to, like, keep them straight and narrow. Like, not necessarily water within the labyrinth, but if he can sense the water outside of it, like, maybe that'll help them. I don't know. It seems weird.
I think that would be a good thing if the labyrinth wasn't magic, because I think that it keeps moving. Like, that's the problem. And we know that the labyrinth tries to trick you, and you have to use its own trickiness against itself, and I think that's something they haven't quite figured out yet.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I'm definitely curious to see how this pans out, though, because, like, I'm very interested.
Oh, yeah. That pretty much wraps this up, because Hera leaves, and they continue on, and there's a creature coming at them.
Yeah.
We don't know what it is, but it's a big-ass thing that both Grover and Tyson can sense. Honestly, I am starting to think that Grover might be a little bit grateful for Tyson, because it's not just Grover sensing these things. Like, he can kind of look at him and be like, you feel it too? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Big thing coming our way. We should probably move. And
also, Tyson's a very good protector, so.
And not afraid of the dark, like Grover kind of is. Grover does not like being underground, whereas Tyson's like, yeah, this is, I can tell you what's normal. I live underground. Yeah. I like being underground. So, yeah. Definitely useful, that's for sure. Okay, so yeah, that, I mean, it really does wrap us up here. Let's do our favorite quotes, and I will let Karen go first this time.
Mine is from Tyson, who says, "Underground smells like that, monsters and dead milk people." And I was like, that is such a unique, perfect way to describe that.
Yeah.
But like, yikes.
Right? This is going to be a fun quest. Yeah. No, it's not the fun quest.
It's not the fun quest.
No. Mine was, "Grover, dear, use your napkin. Don't eat it." Thanks, Hera.
It's in moments like that I kind of like Hera.
Right?
Like, when she's being actually motherly and, like, patient and cute.
And she, like, knows to say it before Grover has it in his hand. Like, use it. Don't eat it. Thank you. Okay. And then favorite moments. What was yours?
Just Giannis in general, he seems like a very interesting character, and I like this kind of duality of his two sides, which is like his entire point. And I think that their personalities were just really interesting and big, and will be like really funny to see on screen. I know I keep saying that. I can't help it. I just have the show on my
That's
mind.
That's season four. We're already there, all right, people? It's going to happen. I mean, how could it not? Anyway, no, we're not going there. We're not going there. Okay. Mine is a favorite moment, but it's a favorite moment because it frustrated me, which is really weird. But every time they mention out loud something that can help them navigate the labyrinth, it disappears. You think they would have learned that already. Like, they mentioned the left wall. Annabeth says out loud, "Keep your hand on the left wall so we don't lose it." And the left wall disappears. Like, just poof, gone. You think in that moment you'd say, okay, don't say the things that are helping me out loud. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you say them, they're gone. Because moments later, she says something like, oh, Roman architecture, it's getting older, we're going in the right direction. And what does the maze do? It throws some new sewer pipes and some new graffiti on the walls.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm like, stop saying the stuff out loud. Like, keep it in your head, Annabeth. Because as long as she's following her own advice and not speaking things, it seems like the labyrinth is not aware of the choices she's making.
Right.
It can't read her mind, basically. So I'm like, just tell everyone else to shut it. And that you've got it, and do what you know best. Like, ugh, it just bugs me.
That's actually funny that you say that, because I meant to mention this before. I feel very much like Annabeth is not herself right now, and I think she's still kind of spiraling from the prophecy. But her rushing into that wish, her not picking up on clues like that, feels like she's just not with it right now. And I hope that, you know, she'll click back into it soon, but I kind of want her to do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think you're right. She's not in pure, you know, best Annabeth form at the moment. And she's getting there, but she's going to need to loosen up and get back to thinking things through and doing, you know, what she does best. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so that pretty much wraps us up. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts, including Rewatchable, where we rewatch canceled and cult classic shows, Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with creators, and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which was recently revived thanks to the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly
on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, and that is awesome. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content you might want to see in any of these places. We love hearing from you guys, so feel free to, you know, let us know. Or any comments on things we've talked about in the episodes. We love hearing your takes on things and that sort of thing as well. Next week, we will not be doing chapters again. I know, we just did it, but we're going to skip it because we're going to be talking about The Last Fallen Star, which is the first book in Gracie Kim's series, and we're also going to be talking to her about the second book, as well as some other general things like we have with all the other RRP authors so far. And so we're going to skip doing Battle of the Labyrinth stuff for that week. We'll have a Last Fallen week.
Yeah.
And then we'll get back to chapters and we'll probably be on.
Yeah, we won't have to skip them again for a while. So that's good.
You get one more little break. Enjoy it. Okay. So until next week, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.